Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program. From a cultural perspective, we find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all that getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is home base, the home page, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening and listen to the live stream there. Or you could carry us with you in any of your handheld devices. Just log into TuneIn. TuneIn is a free app. You can download it. And in that search engine, TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for Awakening. You'll see the icon, and you can listen to the program. You can stream it live. And you can even stream it live into your car. So that's Time for Awakening with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. On that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for Awakening, and you'll see the icon. And you'll see interesting content being posted daily. Before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook and Time for Awakening Media. Again, home base is out there and building every day. You can log on to timeforawakening.com and see other interesting content and podcasts of the programs, of all the programs, Time for Awakening. You can download them, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for Awakening Media. Tonight, we're scheduled to have a special guest join us, Chairman of POCC and BPPC. That's the Black Panther Party Cubs. And Prisoner of Conscious Committee, the chairman, Fred Hampton Jr., is scheduled to join us this evening in conversation. And we'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies, everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215 215- 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at Time for an Awakening at gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at African American History Museum here at Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Ellen.
How are you, sir?
It's going. I'm doing fine. This was a restful weekend for me, and I just took advantage of it. But all things look good, and I'm interested in hearing Brother Fred Hampton Jr. and helping us be informed and about the prison thing in general and what's going on in Chicago, if you can. Particularly, Ellie, if I may, I'd just like to throw out, I gave out some misinformation. I think that was Friday around the poverty rate of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I mentioned 40%. It's 28.5%, the poverty rate, and the deep poverty rate is 12%. But the population in Philadelphia through the new census is around 44%. So I got those kind of mixed up. I just wanted to inform the, listening audience. I don't want to try to give out no bad information.
Well, that poverty rate is still one of the highest, if not the highest in the nation, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's what makes it, dangerous. Dangerous in the sense of what we have to do. But it's important for us to be clear about what that means and how we approach that, especially over the issues that we may be dealing with tonight.
Well, listen, I want to welcome in our guest, activist, organizer, chairman of the Prisoners of Conscience Committee and the Black Panther Party Cubs. He was with us before, and we're glad to have him back. The chairman, Fred Hampton Jr., is with us this evening. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
How are you, sir?
Oh, good to be back. Good to be black with you.
I'm glad to have you back with us, myself and Brother Richard.
Well, how you doing there, sir? I'm glad to hear. This will be my first time, interacting with you, and I'm honored and respect of the work you're doing.
Oh, thank you, brother. Good to be online with you also.
Chairman Fred, listen, before we get into different issues that affect our communities, you'll be here on August 5th here in Philadelphia for the 13th annual African Independence Day celebration over at Malcolm X Park here in Philly at 52nd and Pine Street. Talk about your visit here, upcoming visit. You're going to be speaking, Chairman. You're going to be performing. Tell us what you're going to be doing, brother.
Well, first and foremost, I look forward to being able to touch back down again in Philadelphia with our people there, with the community there. I'm still charged up on cloud 1000 from just come back from the monumental commemoration in regards to the MOVE community of this past May.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to definitely preface with that. Look forward to touching down with the people there. Amongst other things, you know, continuing to draw the correlation, the connection, you know, what's happening to our people, whether it be in Philadelphia or Detroit, Baltimore, Louisiana, what have you. Because the sad reality, but reality all the same, is that, you know, we under attack, you know,
yes.
Everywhere. And so just again, in the spirit of forming some principal coalitions, some scientific relationships, making those connections, because one of the tactics that the system does is it tends to get us to have not only reactionary responses and also to see our situation subjectively. In other words, to say, well, it's just bad in Baltimore, it's just bad in Philadelphia, so on and so forth. And another reality is that although, you know, there may be different terms, titles for these different attacks, what was called Department of Children and Family Services in Chicago or some other euphemism they may use in Philadelphia, what have you. But again, to try to draw that correlation with our people, in the spirit of Marcus Garvey, one struggle, one people.
Chairman Fred, we're going to talk about various issues dealing with that affect our communities, both in Chicago and here, Philadelphia, and urban areas across this country. First, let's talk about the issue that the white media tends to always plaster, whether it's in print or television, is the violence in Chicago. Now, looking at it analytically and critically, any conscious person knows that it's always a hidden agenda when you have white media and the structures that uphold white supremacy publicizing something constantly. It's a hidden objective and a meaning behind it. In your estimation, because I don't think that the violence in Chicago is any different than the violence in Philadelphia, in New York, in Baltimore, or any urban areas across this country. Why is it that Chicago is focused in on, and why does it seem like every day it's a headline, 20 killed in Chicago, 10 killed? And what is this? What, in your estimation, what is going on?
I want to say, even when attempting to sum up or assess what the state, with the system, with white power, what it has at hand,
mm-hmm.
I always say that I humble myself to say that, you know, not only me, but our people, we are not even capable of fathoming the entire agenda that this system, you know, that has at play for us, or what it has done to us. And I'm saying that to say that it's a whole, because a lot of times I think we have a position to say, well, this is the reason the system is doing this, so on and so forth. But this is a machine that it's cut from a whole different type of cloth than that of African people historically. But with that being said, it's always, amongst other things, murder, money, and mayhem. You know what I'm saying? It's on this system's mind all the time. And also, it should be put in context, too, the quote that Malcolm X said, that even in cases where people attempt to comply or lay down for the system, this system is so parasitic that it would say, or people say, well, master, have I done everything for you? And this system would say, no, turn over. So people, we need to, that's hard for a lot of people to conceive, but put in context, this is a parasitical system. As Field Marshal George Jackson of the Black Panther Party said, capitalism is a parasitical system, it's a parasitical politic, it's a blood-sucking system, it's a blood-sucking politic. With that being said, Chicago, though it's a microcosm, I'm gonna go with the term Chirac, you know, because that's the term that a lot of people have an issue with. We take the position that add on to the old adage that says that God created Africans and America made God created Africans and America made niggas. We add on to that, that this system, that the mayors and the machine have manufactured Chirac. So the fact is, as you just stated, my brother, this is happening in every colonized community, you know, throughout the country, not better yet, throughout the world. But let's go with the fact that they get the spotlight on Chirac.
Okay.
Cook County, when Chicago was in Cook County, at one time, and that number is fastly decreasing, was per capita the largest county of black people in the country. Cook County Jail serves as the largest county jail in the country, though California has the largest prison population. But Cook County Jail is the largest jail in the country. You have a lot of the black organizations are based here in the city of Chicago, and even the highway at the I-57. It's been noted that it's geographically beneficial to the system. In fact, it's known as the heroin highway. It's for a lot of the drugs to be dispersed. Another factor that many people you never hear the media make mention of is the cartel's presence in the city of Chicago. In fact, there was a movie, El Chapo, that the movie was allowed to be played throughout the country, but they refused for the movie to be played in Chicago because it would draw the direct correlation about the cartel's presence in this city. So there are a number of different dynamics at hand, you know. And also, what many people euphemistically refer to as gentrification, which opposition is the land grab. They're pushing us up out of here. But again, to reiterate what you said, this is happening to our people, you know what I'm saying, from Memphis, Tennessee, Philadelphia, New York, you name it. But it's another direct contrast is that at one time Chicago, and still to this day, was one of the top segregated cities within the country, and it was also noted for its structure in various religious institutions, even down to the street organizations. And one of the things one of America's policies that when it comes to we're talking about Chicago, Africa, Afghanistan. One of America's policies is to create chaos and then restore order, and that's you've seen a blatant contrast that a lot of the organizations have been dismantled strategically. They have targeted certain individuals who have backbone, who have a structure, and you've seen a blatant fallout that's happening. You know, say what a lot of people call this this term they use is so-called black on black crime. But these are just some of the effects, and it's intense. Again, on a day-to-day basis, I mean, a few prior to you calling, you know, I mean, the gunshots, the police sirens, the ambulance sirens, it's all day, every day. And so it's a war zone. As you said, in so many other communities, it's the same case, too.
Jim and Fred, listen, your work takes you into our communities, into the streets. You're talking with the young people. You're talking with the whole spectrum, the old and young. The weapons that are in our communities, sometimes some of our people can't get a finger on how these weapons are getting into the communities because we don't produce them. How are they? Chicago is one of the main ports in this country, land ports. I want to read from this DEA report in a minute dealing with the drugs. But before I get to that, talk about the weapons that are in our neighborhoods. Where are the young people getting their hands? Who's funneling these weapons? I know it's coming from law enforcement, but you can't, or law enforcement has a hand in it, but you can't say, you know, it's like an unseen hand. But talk about, from your estimation, these weapons in our community. What is going on?
That contradiction, that issue, is so blatant to the point that I'm hesitant to even use the term unseen hand.
Okay.
It is so blatant what's happening. Inglewood is on south side of Chicago. Inglewood and North Lawndale. North Lawndale is on the west side of Chicago. These are two of the most disenfranchised communities in Chicago. It's like a whole different world from places, Hyde Park, a place where University of Chicago resides at. It's like a whole different world. In fact, this is what we talk about, Chicago and Chirac, the tales of two cities, two totally different dynamics. But Inglewood, North Lawndale, you'll be hard pressed to get a Uber driver to come pick you up, or a taxi cab, or a pizza delivery man. But you find no problem on a weekly basis. Automatic weaponry, literally dropped into the hands of children. There's, in fact, there's a young guy that's on YouTube that he had to move out of Chicago because they see threats on his life. He talks about his involvement in the streets, and he talked about the police will literally come wake him up to tell him to come out there and pick up the weapons.
You know what? I saw that. But go ahead. Yes. I saw that.
Yes. And he talked about how he went to gun ranges with white men. And the type of weaponry he was describing, people who were in the military would say, whoa, how do you know about this? Where do you get this from? It's the type of weaponry is mind-blowing. Children that you can talk to in the time that they receive them. And this conversation should not be disconnected from other tentacles of how the system is attacking us. For example, there was a release by Nicki Minaj, just one of the Pied Pipers for this system. Even the music should be put in the context of propaganda bombs that are being dropped on our people, and our children in particular. The time that they're showing them, the type of music they're playing to them, and what time. That was released by Nicki Minaj, and they had it glorified it in the violence in Chicago and Chirac. It glorified it, pushed it, and encouraged it. And shortly thereafter, I think 3 or 4 days later, on 59th and Normal, this is in the Inglewood area, there was another quote-unquote railroad train robbery. And this is in particular Norfolk Railroad. They've been continuously these droppings of the it's not uncommon here, about 100 weapons are fully equipped, bullets, everything assembled. I mean, you don't even hear them transferring microwave ovens. You know, everything is put together, fully assembled, fully equipped, bullets, everything. So this case, shortly after the release of this record, on 59th Normal, the Norfolk Railroad, over 100 something assault rifles got dropped in the hands of children. Then you had another one of the cases about this pregnant sister around this on expressway right there, and got shot, like literally shot and murdered hours after this drop. And when I say drop again, because it's an insult to refer to these as train robberies, because even the mainstream media came out to this report talking about these brazen trail robberies. They literally, it's a machine set up with weaponry is dropped into these children's hands. In fact, it was also exposed that they're not even noted that weapons have been stolen. Excuse me, the weapons have been the weapons are missing until the trains port back into Virginia. So you have a time lapse where you don't say, well, it's not even reported that the weapons are gone. And if that's not enough, it's not uncommon to hear about situation 3 days after U.S. President Donald Trump had announced he's bringing the feds in to Chicago, which is a contradiction, being the feds have been in Chicago. There was a case where an agent was at a gas station in North Lawndale, the west side of Chicago, left his car running at the gas station. And it was a 17-year-old child supposed to get the car with two bulletproof vests, I think it was approximately 9 automatic weapons in the car. Now, you know what I'm saying? Days later, the child was supposed to be locked up. But, you know what I'm saying? But again, there are literally drops. And again, it should be noted they're placed in the most disenfranchised community. And you have people come and say, well, why are the people accepting this, so on and so forth? Why are they taking the guns? Again, people are missing a major point. We say the most disenfranchised communities is similar to the tactic that was employed in Haiti, where the World Health Organization was doing tests with these pigs. And then when they were complete with the test, they dropped the pigs in the most starving communities. And it was later on, after people were eating the pigs, the male children were being born with large breasts. You know what I'm saying? So people say, what's the connection? Why certain things are being dropped in what type of communities, and so on and so forth? It's a machine. It's strategic. What's happening to our people, to our communities?
I'm going to take a break now. I'll take a break in a few. Let me read from this report to get you to expand on something that you mentioned about 5 or 10 minutes ago, talking about the cartels, Chairman Fred. Let me read from this report, a brief paragraph from the 2014 National Drug Threat Assessment from the DEA. The DEA's 2014 National Drug Threat Assessment found that while Afghanistan is by far the world's largest producer of heroin, it largely lends its heroin to markets in Europe and Asia, while half of the heroin found in the United States comes from Mexico, up to 39% in 2008. Now, something I want to mention, too, because some of our people don't connect the dots. You know, we this country has been fighting in Afghanistan, supposedly fighting, but we see that Afghanistan is the world's largest producer of heroin. All of that ties in. That's why the United States is there. But let me continue on this article. The Sinaloa cartel's near monopoly on the drug trade in Chicago has led to skyrocketing levels of violence among lower-level drug gangs throughout the Windy City and left drug enforcement officials in the Midwest struggling to catch up. According to this DEA report, they supposedly know exactly who's bringing the drugs in. They don't mention the United States' involvement in it. They just talk about Mexico's drug cartels. That kind of coincides to what you were saying a little while ago, Chairman Fred, about the Mexican cartels involved, heavily involved in what's going on in Chicago on violence and pushing dope. Talk about it.
As I said earlier, when we talk about these different contradictions, these different attacks, these different issues, it's imperative that we draw the connection or attempt to draw the connection, you know what I'm saying, from the transportation or lack thereof, you know what I'm saying, with our communities, the education or lack thereof, education, you name it. You know, again, everything is political. The media's role, and also the propaganda. You would be hard pressed to find any reference of acknowledgement that the cartel exists in Chicago, as opposed to say, like there's a case this recent Memphis, Tennessee, where they had brought this big case. There was an alleged drug pipeline with a former Compton police officer, Reggie Wright Sr. and Reggie Wright Jr. And they were talking about the whole dynamic about the cartel, and doing the indictment, you heard mention of the cartel, reference to the cartel. Similar to former director of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover's position about refusing to even acknowledge that the mafioso had existed. And that, in fact, they went years on and said that there was no such thing as the mafia in the United States. You see a similar tactic being employed with this dynamic, you know, and with, you know, as you mentioned earlier, even with the Sinaloa cartel, which is more southern Mexico, and so I want to emphasize that because it's a lot of people when they hear these different contradictions, people resort to a reactionary, just a simple race dynamic to say the entire Mexicano community, so on and so forth, similar to that during the mafioso, the entire Italian community, but there's a certain element. You know what I'm saying? And the state, and if we trace it back historically, it's always a state-made dynamic, you know what I'm saying, that not only gives the green light, you know what I'm saying, for the transport, move drugs, weapons, so on and so forth, similar to like the Iran-Contra, the contradictions, you know what I'm saying? The Contras were not only given the green light, but they were funded, they were backed. Matter of fact, deeper than that, created by U.S. imperialism. You know what I'm saying? So if we check our emotions as opposed to our emotions check us, you can see the pig's hoof prints on all of these dynamics. And as opposed to us having these reactionary responses, when we get these catchphrases like, you know, crime in Chicago, crime was the killing in Chirac, and automatically seeing these imageries of these 16, 17-year-old, you know, black children with dreadlocks, you know, as opposed to saying, wait a minute, there's a whole different dynamic. And when we talk about such contradictions as cartels, so on and so forth, not like the days of old when people hear terms like, you know, gang, they just think like these individuals on the street. This is infiltrated in every every dynamic, the court system, the school system, the media, you name it. Its tentacles impact every apparatus, every genre. And the advantage to the ruling class and the disadvantage to the people is the non-acknowledgement. You know what I'm saying? You'll hear gang. There are situations happening in Chicago, even to the case a few months back around 43rd Ashton, when there was the police was shot in an area that's known for the cartel's connection to the state. When the police were shot, there was a refusal. There was never, even though the community knew, it was rumored that the police had supposedly made a bad drop to the cartel, so on and so forth. However, there was never an acknowledgement by the media or any other ruling class entity that it was just in the cartel's presence is in the city of Chicago or Chirac. Mm-hmm.
Richard, go ahead. Yeah, and I'll take a break after you jump in. Yeah, go ahead.
What I wanted to do, Chairman Fred, was once again, you kind of touched on it because I think it's important for us to understand, as you said, it so that we wouldn't be reactionary, that understand that it is a system, right? And as you say, a ruling class system. Could you, again, so that the audience is clear and we're clear, that the elements, you mentioned the school, the law enforcement, that these are bureaucracies to the system that is supposed to accomplish a certain end. For you in Chicago, what do you see that end is? And just for clarity's sake, because I think it's important for us to be clear about what we're looking at. And as you say, the disinformation or lack of information when it comes to events that are occurring.
It's bleak. It's just bleak. I just said the funeral the other day, and funeral is every day, it's every day, all day. It would not surprise me if the city of Chicago dispersed U-Haul trucks and hearses to literally come knock on our doors tomorrow and say, listen, haven't y'all got the point? Y'all got to get up out of here one way or another. Mm. To the black community in particular. Beating around the bush, these cold words, I'm talking about the increased property taxes. Property taxes to the point that even high-paid slaves, like NBA player Dwayne Wade, he even talked about the threat of losing one of his homes, right outside Chicago because of the property taxes. In fact, Cook County has held the highest taxes, I believe, also in the country. And it is constantly, with the strategic time, the trumped up, tickets and from vehicle tickets, because you have a problem. Very few people can even drive now because it's not uncommon to see come out and see the boots placed on people's cars throughout the community. They coming through areas just blatantly giving people, if you walked on the wrong side, you rode your bicycle on the wrong side of the street, giving these tickets, just blatantly pushing the people up out of here. And even the attempt for people to purchase homes or rent, there's so many guidelines set up that the black community in particular can purchase homes, can rent. And it's similar to a tactic, reminds me of a tactic I read about that he had employed in the 50s in the Hyde Park area. In fact, when Mayor Daley Sr. was then the Cook County Treasurer, it was something to the fact that they a law that you have to have insurance on your home, but simultaneously they told the insurance brokers refuse to sell insurance to the black community. So it's a catch-22 situation. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. So these are different types of day-to-day situations. That's another tax coming in this Wednesday where drinks with a certain amount of sugar in the drinks, they want to place this tax on it that the tax would really be more than the actual drink. And some people say, well, we shouldn't be drinking this stuff anyway. But when you come to our community, that's the only thing that they have for us. What's the term they use? These food deserts. You know what I'm saying? A lot of us think vegetables is a pack of cherry now later, cherry candy. So these are the type of policies and practices, not to even mention about the rampant police terrorism. Again, not police brutality, but the police terrorism that's constant through our community. A lot of people became familiar with the what is referred to as the black sites. Again, the black sites. These are literally underground stations, underground areas, where the police themselves admit they don't have to adhere to any sort of protocol or procedure. Well, you just, what's known as the jump out boys, masked policemen, you know what I'm saying? And many who who admit their connection to the cartel, Marines, military, dropped inside our communities, and they just come and snatch you up. You know, your loved ones, nobody knows what happened to you. And many people became familiarized with this when a white individual was taken down to the black sites. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't beat, but the fact he was taken there, that's when you had an uproar between, you know, a lot of the quote-unquote liberal press, you know, about what are these black sites? But the name itself tells you what's been going down all the time. In fact, there's reports of, when they did a big sweep on one of the major street organizations that was in Chicago, the GDs, formerly the Gangster Disciples, later on to be recognized as the Growth and Development. There are sections of them that were snatched up in 1996 that to this day people have never seen again.
You, Chairman Fred, you're talking about the those areas where they were torturing people that they uncovered in the media. Supposedly it became a revelation that it was torture camps similar to Abu Ghraib over there. Okay.
And they still exist. Yeah, they refer to, black sites, yes.
Okay.
And just to reemphasize the point that you make, because even in Philadelphia, when you talk about, and you touched it, as I said, the whole apparatus of gentrification, the movement of black people out of these communities that we have historically had to fight to get in with all those regulations that were in place. And now that we were in, through this here process of trying to move us out, our moving us out in Philadelphia, you could see four or five different communities that they keep emphasizing the price to live, I mean, the price of the housing, the population that is coming in, and people ask the question, well, where are black people going? And they're moving us, we are moving, and they are moving us. And then the other laws that are put in place that affect us who are below the poverty level or utilize any kind of public assistance. We just heard that here. If you have, they're putting a statute in place. If you get federal assistance or state assistance and you have a particular type of car, you're to be questioned of how you got that car. So the laws are to emphasize, to maintain and push us out of these areas. So I think that's important for us to see that it is systemic. It is a process. So with the cartels feeding the drugs on one side, the legal quote unquote legal apparatus is using the economic stimulus to move us on the other side, those who consider themselves not a part of the quote-unquote criminal culture. Elliot, I'd just like to ask the chairman, you know, the work that you're doing with the in the prison era, how is that developing, and what could you tell us about that? I noticed here in Philadelphia, you know, you're mentioning you'll be here next week, that the Universal Negro Improvement Association is having a Help Our Families, Our Family Needs in relationship to the prison effort. So as far as your efforts in dealing with prisons, how is that going? And, what do you see has been the positive outcome of that?
It's a struggle. We talk about the prison question, or better yet, the concentration camp contradiction.
Yes.
Malcolm X has said that, you know, America itself represents prison. And as Minister U.E.P. Newton said that, you know, talk about, you know, prison is a microcosm of what's, you know, the outside community. And our mantra, one of our mantras is free them all. And it's not just in regards to that of those who are held captive in these concentration camps, but also to, our, you know, to make the connection to our people, to our people in general, you know, but don't we recognize the intensity, you know, the intensifying attacks and contradictions that are happening behind those walls? In response to that, we have a number of different programs and campaigns, ranging from what we refer to the Harriet Tubman Code. That's where those who are fortunate to be able to come out of those concentration camps with their sanity and be alive, that we make a commitment to make sure we reach back, to go back to reach for others who are held captive in those concentration camps. We also have the one prisoner, one contact. One prisoner, one contact. That's what we say. Everyone in the outside community at any given time should be able to give us a status check, an update on some respective prisoner. You know what I'm saying? Whether it be the Mumia Abu Jamal's, the Move 9, Emmanuel Jamil Alameen, your brother, the sister down the street, those in those juvenile detention centers, our people in general, and not draw as a foregone conclusion that someone is locked up, that they are being treated humanely, or that they even are alive. There are cases where in Illinois, prisoners have been dead over excess of 10 to 15 years, but the state still receive resources from them because lack of accountability. In fact, one of the former Führer of Nazi Germany, Adolf Hitler, one of his initial tactics, the ones he initially gassed in the gas chambers was the ones they studied who did not receive any mail. In that spirit, the state studies who has contact, because it's individuals we're doing. So these are different campaigns and programs that we have, and we attempt with our work not to detach the attacks as well as our responses to the attacks. In other words, we try to tie our survival programs, such as the Black Panther Party Cubs, Triple C's, this Trojan Community Cubs, every Saturday, we write in the heart of the community, serving the people. But at the same time, we give them information about somebody who's held captive and getting involved in one prison, one contact campaign. And also, their relationship is reciprocal. We call on those, the contacts we have held captive, any ideas that they may have, although they're held captive, you know what I'm saying, some participation involved in our struggle, struggling with this again to keep this connection from those who are held captive to the outside community.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can join this conversation, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Join the conversation with activist organizer, the chairman, Fred Hapton, Jr. There's one call on hold. We'll pick you up right after the break. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
No, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm going to go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy black365.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
On the move. Assalamu alaikum. Free Mumia. Free Mumia. Free Mumia. Free Mumia now. Brothers and sisters, comrades, it's certainly my pleasure to be here. One of your state representatives from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, I am ashamed to be a state representative in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania with a chump like Governor Ridge at the helm. I'm ashamed. But I wanted to come here today to let you know that some of us are not afraid, that even though we may be elected, we'll say what's on our mind. But we must understand that we're freedom fighters first, and that all the other things come next. That I'm a black man first and then a state representative. I don't confuse the two. And I think it's time for us to wake up and realize and understand that you got a lot of us that are willing to go to battle because the freedom ain't gonna never be free unless we take it. There's too many of us sitting around thinking that it's gonna come to us on some damn silver platter. Wake up, you fools, and understand this man has no respect for you, none. None whatsoever. And they will continue to do what they do to Mumia only because they feel that you don't have no heart. Well, let me just say this to y'all. I want to send a message to the FOP. I want to make it loud and clear so it won't be any mistake about what's being said today. And I'm saying it as a black man in the city of Philadelphia and not as the state representative. I ain't scared the hell of y'all. And I'm not going to let you intimidate our people either. That's over. So when you come on with some threat about you going to boycott every event that we had and you going to stop the people from coming to contribute their money, get the hell out of our way because we ain't going nowhere. The time has come for everybody to wake up and realize that this ain't no joke. We're not going to let you take Mumia's life. And we want to send a message to America that the death penalty has got to end. We're going to wipe it out the same way they did in South Africa. But they did it by power of the people. When Nelson Mandela stepped out of jail and threw his hands up in the air, he was a strong brother. After 27 years being in jail, it didn't cripple his spirit. And I want to let all of you know that have come from all across this country. You got some brothers and sisters in Philadelphia that are willing to rumble no matter what and ain't afraid of the Philadelphia police, the national police, the FOP, and all the rest of them that come together with. Day. In my conclusion, I just want to say, and I know the time has been rough today, but a lot of y'all need to know what this looks like for many of us here in the city of Philadelphia. Governor Ridge is getting a message again. Not only did those 115,000 calls go on, that's an underestimated of the number that have been calling, that's an underestimated number of those who signed petitions, that's an underestimated number of those who've come in and out of the city of Philadelphia from all across this country to give the kind of solidarity that's needed in order to make sure we free Mumia Abdul-Jabbar. We're not going to take this lying down. And I know that Mumia, in his heart, knows that we're all with him. So brothers and sisters, we're here as freedom fighters and black liberation strugglers who understand the importance of who and what we are, and we ain't gonna let no titles get in the way. Free Mumia. Free Mumia. Free Mumia. Free Mumia. No justice. No justice. Assalamu alaikum.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m. Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at Time for an Awakening. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're joined in conversation this evening with activist, organizer, the chairman, Fred Hampton Jr., is with us in conversation. And, Chairman, you with us? Still with us?
Yes, sir.
Let's go to the phones. We got a couple callers here waiting on hold. 267 area code. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Brother Timothy. Brother Timothy from South Philly.
How are you, sir?
How are you? Good. How's Brother Reggie over there?
Richard.
Brother Richard is good.
Richard, okay. Brother Richard, everything good?
Yes, sir.
Listen, Chairman, comrade, much respect for the Black Panther Party, especially your father. I'm happy to see that you're carrying the legacy on, man. You're live and breathing, and you sound well.
Thank you. Good thanks. Revolutionary love and appreciation. Thank you. It's a tough act to follow, but we try our best. And I'm honored and humbled not only to be the son of Chairman Freer, but also Makua and Jerry, and also honored and humbled to be able to serve the people. So thank you. Thank the people in general for allowing me, better yet, for allowing us to serve the people.
And brother, I'm told you're doing a good job. Brother, I'm going to bring this up here, right? And I'm going to take a look at Chicago, right? And I'm going to ask you, the National Center that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had in Chicago, right? And now I believe Mr. Farrakhan have obtained that, and he has that now. Is that correct, Chicago?
Yes. To my knowledge, yes.
Okay. My question to you is that in that community, what is it like? Where the National Center is it thriving with businesses, school, hospital, bank, bakery, or whatever economic empowerment helps the community to go through its trials and tribulations? And also I'm going to say to you that is the National Center secured and the area around it not? But I'm also going to say this to you that you can always tell about a community what's going on with its people. And if the economics, the education, and the think tank of Black people is functioning correctly, that means we're controlling our community. Now, my thing to you is that living in Philadelphia, living in an area that's been gentrified, like a lot of areas in America, and having the problems with people losing their homes, the raise in taxes, the gentrification, the racism, out of all that, I always could tell you, show Brother Richard, that the propaganda they use in Black communities that, oh, it's so bad there, the drugs are so bad there, the crimes are so bad there, that we can't even go there. But here we have gentrification in our neighborhood. We have whites coming and moving in here and setting up business. So it can't be that bad. That's a propaganda piece. So my question to you is, brother, is it possible that in Chicago, where activists like you are, or some type of nationhood group like you are, that we can control that community and whatever it is that's negative, kick it out? Because I'm going to say this to you. In Philadelphia, and Philadelphia alone, Richard and Elliot tell you, some of the baddest corners in Philadelphia, whether it was the Tenderloin in North Philly, 25th and Diamond, whether it was the Zulu Nation, whether it was the Barbary Coast in West Philly, whether it was the Empire Game in West Philly, or whether it was 20th and Carpenter, or the Road, or 50th and 70th, these people are now in these communities that were so bad. They were fighting amongst each other. That's a part of propaganda. That's a part of the brainwashing. We were fighting each other. Black people were afraid to come in their own community at times. But now you have white men who control the street. Because he now has those communities, which were the best parts of the community, and he has them. And he has turned it around. So I'm asking you, with all your experience being around probably conscious brothers and sisters, how do we go back obtaining and having our community? I'm going to say this. Elliot and I had a conversation not too long ago. And a lot of people say, well, I'm a Black man, I'm a Black woman, I can't get along with this in my community. I can't get the public school system to help me to bring about public education, to build back the school that they tore down. But me, I only had a nice conversation not too long ago. At one time, black people didn't ask anybody for money from the government. They came from a segregated South, set up business, whether they start off having a fish store, whether they started with shoe shining, whether they started off with newspapers, whether they did a variety store, whether they sold chickens, whatever they did, black people learned how to make it selling dinners out of their house before they started the restaurant. So my question to you, what direction in which we go to bring that kind of situation back? To have a public school in your neighborhood where your son or daughter has to walk out of their neighborhood. Okay? At one time, as bad as the gangs were, you had some gangs that would make sure that some elderly were protected. We need to bring about all that kind of security. And as bad things were, the nation has not had a program to bring those criminals in and turn them around. The Black Panther Party, like you know, and like I know, okay, they were educated men. Your dad was, they were bringing in people, men, and turning their minds around. The direction is already here. It's listening to the people. I want to know how to get that thing back. Because we're amongst the enemy. They don't want us to have that. But he ain't that powerful. He ain't that powerful when he's controlling your mind like that. Let's be for real. If we have a census, I listen to Brother Elliott's program. Sometimes I might listen, might not say nothing. When I hear him talk to people around the country, these people are enlightened. And I'm telling you, I want to know what direction do we go? What is the Nation of Islam doing in Chicago? What is the other organizations of activists doing in Chicago? What is Bobby Rush doing in Chicago? I'm going to say, look, we can also talk about Philadelphia. Okay, Rich and I can tell you what we think the people in Chicago should be, in Philadelphia should be doing. We're guilty of a lot of things, too. Like Philadelphia is perfect. It ain't no different than anything else in the United States.
Well, let him address to what you asked, Tim. Jim.
Yes, you, brother, you came with a lot.
Yeah.
Let me see where I can pick. Where I can go at. You mentioned early on the National Center of Nation Islam, like the different, even with the Muhammad University, they have those institutions there, and I also to add on to something you said too. A majority, a lot of even black organizations are based in the city of Chicago. However, these different areas, as well as, you know, no areas and no organization, no nothing is immune from what's happening here. You know, what's happening here. And when I say here again, I know to some degree, or in the near future, to some degree, it's happening in every oppressed community. And these the attacks, that are spilling over. And to hitting, you know, every this challenging the race as well as the class contradiction, and but the deal is when it happens, like I mentioned, just talking about this yesterday, when you have a situation like this, go to race contradiction, when an elderly white woman had a purse snatched up north by the Comiskey Park where the Cubs baseball team plays at, that was solved within a matter of hours. So you see. Again, it's a different type of conversation that's happening now because, you know, again, with this being one of the top segregated cities in the country, there was a certain time to say, okay, well, that's the bad area over there. Don't go through this part of the west side, this part of the south side, so on and so forth. But you see the contradictions are impacting everywhere, every arena. And so with that being said, we say, Chairman Fraser always say, nothing all bad, nothing all good. So these countries are opening the door to the possibility and even of merging principal coalitions and scientific relationships. We are similar to that, like in the late 60s, where even contrary to a lot of people have been told, it was Reverend Jesse Jackson, it was actually Chairman Fred Hampton who organized the Real Deal Rainbow Coalition. But it must be put in context of the timing, where he was able to win the various brothers and sisters from various street organizations and able to, you know, say, the young lords, Cha Cha Manny, and so on and so forth. But the conditions have to be right for these type of conversations. And we say that people become conscious or get involved in work or even get together, not just doesn't come out of a vacuum. People become conscious or get together one of three ways in response: inspiration, aspiration, or desperation. So desperate times are here, definitely. Something else you had mentioned, about the reason you mentioned about there was a time where, a lot of organizations didn't have to, have to receive resources from, the state or any other entity. That's something that should be inclusive. We talk about this war that's waging on our people. The whole the question about resources, finance. The deal is we are being out-resourced. Our war chests are bare. You know, I'm embarrassed to tell you about. I had to go hop on public transportation or something. Do some protests and some forces get locked up. They hitting us hard with that, and we always been hit hard. So this ain't nothing new. However, this system is we being out-resourced, out-funded by these state-sanctioned spokespersons. The creation of these GMOs, these government-made organizations that serve a myriad of purposes. Amongst those, even confusing the people. This is something that's a big conversation they're talking about in Ferguson, or we call Mike Brown Town, about the different the poverty pimps that were funded and created. You know what I'm saying? The moralize the people, and a lot of times, by the time people get hip to them, you know what I'm saying? Your morale is down. You say, well, I'm not going to get involved in the movement. But actually, these different entities were actually never the movement. So that's something that has to be addressed and acknowledged. Because a lot of times we have a reactionary response. We say, well, at least such and such is doing this. At least such and such is there. At least such and such is on the news. In Chicago, they have an actual person that is literally on the police payroll. I mean, he literally works for the police. And every time you see something happen, this person is heralded as a community activist. I mean, you don't even have to go Google. He is literally on the literally works for the police department. And every time, but you have some people that actually consider this individual a community activist. And there's so many of these individuals and I'm using this term loosely, organizations that the University of Chicago and the likes have created to contend with the legacy of organizations that have a track record or sincere people that are really out here, getting down with the situation. The University of Chicago literally sits up there and they get petri dishes and produce individuals who may have a similar name. Some years back, they created a group of individuals who literally, these clones literally try to look like us. They wore the same hats, you name it. And it's been they've tried 1,000 different times. We gonna stay the course. We're gonna be consistent. But again, a sad reality is we are out resourced.
Okay, you know now, I'm gonna stop you. You're right. Now, this is one thing that Elliot and Richard and myself talk about all the time. The sellout politician. The sellout politician let developer come here. The sellout politician who wants to destroy public education. The sellout politician who goes against his own people and wants to arrest them or have them locked up for taking bribes and deal, and they turn around and he or she gets locked up for the bribe and deal, and they look like me and you. See, that's the other problem. There may be the good politician, they're far too, but we got the majority of the sellout politicians that don't wear the uniform that look like me and you, that's against us.
Tim, thank you for your call, man.
Right.
Yes, indeed.
We got an open line at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Go ahead, Jimmy.
I was going to ask his last point.
Okay.
Especially, not just in Philadelphia, I liken the machine politics to Chicago with the whole. It reminds me a lot. I speak about that a lot whenever I'm in Philadelphia. But especially where the question of the black place, metropolis, and places like Chicago and the likes, the question of neo-colonialism can never be negated. In other words, white power disguised in black faces. That's something we can never negate. And we have been criticized. So we as the Black Panther Party Cubs for calling the contradiction on a lot of individuals who people say, well, you shouldn't disagree with black people in public, so on and so forth. We are consistent. We call a contradiction not only on Uncle Sam, but Sambo. Not only on the gringos, but the Negroes. And whether these attacks come from Rockefeller himself or Rockefeller Records, we don't cut no corners about it. And that's something, that, again, in place where we have a black populace, that's something, again, we cannot afford the luxury to negate. And I'm going to say this, too. I think we can save ourselves a lot of time. One, if we be careful, a lot of times we speak French at the wrong time. We're saying we. We all don't have the same interests. And we need to come to grips with that, the reality. And two, I think sellout. We think sellout is one of the most overused terms in our community. Because the deal is, if you go back and check the track record, a lot of these individuals, they were in the maternity wards, they was on garbage. The state literally made them, and the warning signs be on the walls. So again, we look at their track record, their resume, so on and so forth. These groups that they create now, all these organizations they create now, you can do a community credit check. You can't find no background, popped up out of nowhere. So again, a lot of these individuals are not even sellouts. They have been groomed, they have been birthed, they have been produced in the petri dishes from University of Chicago and the likes.
I like to add for Philadelphia. For me, it seems the University of Pennsylvania is one of those areas where these individuals are. If they don't come out of, they're cultivated. They're brought back to cultivated and then brought back out. But you raised something, Chairman Fred, that we kind of have some discussion around, and that is the political system. So I guess the question I have: Do you view that the political system is something that we who recognize the need for the cultivation of power, and that might be stages, but that we should use? Or is it something that, you know, based off of you or the organizations you represent, that we should not be engaged in?
Well, let me first stress that we struggle to distinguish electoral politics from politics. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people say, well, Chairman Fred, I know you don't really be involved in politics. I say, no, I beg to differ. Because, again, we say that everything is political. Words, terms, fashion, music, everything is political. Now, the process of electoral politics, I do, like any other phenomenon, I think it's a case-by-case situation. We need to be coming in with some clarity. Not dealing with some sort of absolutes. Like, if, for example, when they had that vote or die campaign, Puffy Combs refused. We did not allow him to cross state line with that garbage. Our position was that we up the ante. We don't want you to take the position that it's going to be simply, you know, it's a foregone conclusion that we're going to vote or die. We hold people accountable. You know, in some cases, it's embarrassing to say, but it. We're not in a position to hold people accountable. It's a phenomenon that we can't work. It's like the old saying, Minister UEP Newman said, power. Power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in desired manner. Power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in desired manner. So like during the era of chattel slavery, so it wasn't an absolute that Harriet Tubman would utilize the Negro spirituals. It wasn't absolute that Reverend Nat Turner would utilize the church. We have to assess these different phenomena and say, okay, can we define and utilize this phenomenon, or will it flip the script, or will the state incorrectly define it and use us? So that becomes the question of the day. You know what I'm saying?
I respect that.
Yes, sir.
Because that gives us the power to make choices in relationship to that at the time, and definitely from the perspective of our self-interest. This tool, if we're speaking the same language, does this tool really work for us? If we use it, will it work against us if we use it?
Yes.
Let me grab this call. 602 area code. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, and good evening to the guests, the chairman. It's Brother Marcus from Memphis.
How are you, sir?
All right, I'm doing good. Yes, brother. You know, chairman, what you say going on in Chicago, I live here in Memphis. It's going on here also. The same foolishness. And it's surprising, too, that you guys up there, you got a liberal Jewish mayor, Rahm Emanuel, right? We got this state senator down here, a Jewish Cohen, you see. Now, you know, you see, Tom's, we got to get sophisticated enough to use Tom doing them, because Tom is in the business of Tomming. That's what Tom do. You see, we got to get sophisticated where we could use Tom too, because you see, occasionally the white man slap Tom around and kick him in the butt, and then Tom get mad and he'll throw a bone through the window. You see what I'm saying? So we got to, you know, the white man treat Tom bad too. You see? And remember now, the original Tom, right, was he took the blows. You see? So we got to get sophisticated where we could use Tom. Now, 400 years is long enough to know. Okay? We have been in this country for over 400 years. And we see what's going on in this country now. You know, so, Sir Chairman, I would like to ask your opinion on what do you think about us seriously now implementing Mr. Garvey's program, because this issue is about land, okay? That's why they're moving us all over the place. You know, it's about land. And they're not going to let us get no total here. Look, 400 years, if there was any human relationship to be worked out with anybody, we could have worked it out in 400 years. Don't you think so, gentlemen? Don't you agree with that? 400 years, if there was any human relationship, don't you think we could have worked it out in 400 years?
Definitely.
Okay, definitely. So they have no intention of working out anything with us. So we have to work out our way. So I would like to hear the chairman's opinion on us seriously now moving, implementing Mr. Garvey's program and go rejoin the mass majority of our people on the motherland. And later on, we'll come back and deal with him, okay? But right now, I think we got to retreat, because we in a, as you said, we in a desperate situation right now. We in a, our people, we're killing each other, and the system destroying us. So, you know, we got to seriously think about Mr. Garvey's program. But I would just like to hear the chairman's opinion on that, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for your call, Brother Marcus.
Thank you, brother. Long live Marcus Garvey. Son, I think it's important, okay, this system, again, as I said earlier, initially, that I dare not even attempt to fathom what all this system has, what's at stake for us as a people, and land, murder, mayhem, money, you name it. Like even this the situation that's happening right here in Chirac, there's discussion about some sort of trade route from Canada to Chicago. There's so many dynamics benefits that this system has in place that we're not even privy to knowing all the information about it. But the deal is also, I think it's important that we talk about, not only we talk about these attacks, we talk about like it's what happened before. These are continuous attacks, and historically, what are we talking about? Tulsa, Oklahoma, Black Wall Street, you name it. Whenever there has even been an attempt with our people to settle down and gain some land or do the quote-unquote right thing, we constantly, continuously are under attack. And I think even when we reference in history, I think we should struggle to use brutal terms or brutal realities. I kind of take issue with even the term that was known, they talk about a lot of people left Mississippi in the South and they came to places like Chicago and the likes, the term the Great Migration. I don't buy into that. We just up and just left. I'm cut from the school of thought that our grandmothers and aunties and uncles and they were raped and killed and forced up out of these places out of the South, and in many cases save the money from the sharecropping, the so on and so forth to get these plots of land. And wherever we go, it's all again. It's we are attacked internationally. And I don't want to seem like a pessimist, but again, this will be inclusive in the conversation about the past attacks as well as the continuous attacks. And also, I think we
should be cautious about even the terms, the term we. Sun Tzu said in The Art of War, the cardinal principle of war of warfare is to know thyself and know thy enemy, especially in places of which, you know, with this contradiction of neocolonialism, where they put these puppets in our face, and all of a sudden, there are so many, we got a saying, a lot of people are black when it's beneficial, and play Panther when it's profitable, and claim Cubs when it's comfortable.
I hear that.
So when the heat is on, you see so many people, oh yeah, we have to be, Chairman Fred told me a revolution is a scientific art that must be perfected. That clarity, it's an ongoing process, and it's not an absolute. So that whole dynamic about constant, like one of the things we pride ourselves on is coalitions, principal coalitions. Now, there are some cases where we have a coalition with certain forces on one case, and in some situations we say, no, we back it, we can't deal with you on that. Respectfully, we can't deal with you on that. So it's ever developing. As opposed to this broad stroke, this generalization that we all together, and that's something we have to keep in context when we talk about these moves, these mobilizations, that all of us get together. We have to be real again. We have to, man, have our ear close to the ground and watch this turn. We, you know, and be scientific about this, about who is who. And even when I have certain meetings with certain individuals, certain forces, I see you on the battlefield. Now it may be allies, it may be adversaries. I'm armed with a politic that is able to distinguish a cousin from a comrade.
It's one thing that you mentioned, Chairman Hampton, is the point of that coalition. And one thing that I guess I've been pushing for us and pushing for feedback to get clarity on is, do we have a mechanism, and I see using that colloquial way or that mysterious way, but is there a mechanism where these type of coalitions or individual interests amongst us who have historically been colonized or historically of African people can be able to assemble and negotiate from, as you say, from one self-interest to the other? I guess, and hopefully more clearly, I'm asking, do you see that there is a mechanism where the variety of us and we, who have different interests can be able to come and sit at the table and say, today I'll support you, but on this, because it satisfies both our self-interest, but tomorrow I can't support you because it doesn't satisfy my self-interest, but I'm still here with you the day after to see if we can work on something else. Is there a mechanism in place right now where that can occur?
I believe so, and I believe that our communities are pregnant with potential.
I agree with that.
Pregnant with potential. I believe that once we up the ante, other things fall in the line. You know, like there are certain, like I was a few weeks, well, about a month ago. This new black leadership, they convened a coalition of different organizations, and one of the things I really admired about this when I went there. There were forces there who we had struggles with, ideological differences, so on and so forth. However, what was good about it, there were authentic forces there, and as opposed to a lot of these we refer to as these GMOs, government made organizations, mm-hmm. and the conditions help breed that. That's the whole term, the whole dynamic about seizing the time. We have to have our ear to the ground and watch the resumes, so on and so forth. And then, because the sad reality is, a lot of times there are reactionary responses. However, once we stand up, certain forces stand up, stuff clicks right in.
And this is out of self-interest, Elliot and Chairman Fred, because as a member of the Universal Negro Improvement Association, and because of the particular history, and I think because of the core value around, and I call it core value around race first, that structurally, even though it's old and may have to have some changes, it still possibly can what's that? Still possibly provide the opportunity where different organizations at different local, state, and national levels could assemble from their different authentic positions and at least have dialogue. That's I just like to throw that out, not necessarily saying it's absolute and I believe it, but just for a part of dialogue, because I think that our history shows that we have done this many times in this hostile environment. And as you said, looking when we look at the turn of the 20th century, those kind of cooperative networks, negotiation, coalitions were the reasons where we were able to be able to purchase those large land tracts, not as individuals, but as cooperatives. Not that we had the same interests, but we knew we were under the same oppression. And I think that we need to find organizational infrastructures that could provide that opportunity. And that's why I wanted to just throw that out there as a, you know, offering in thought anyway.
Right on. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know. But on the at this too, politics is like, you know, like so many other things like real estate, time and location, all this is important. And it's like it's kind of like I use an analogy like a relationship. So we can look back in our own individual lives and say, well, man, this could have been a good relationship. You know what I'm saying? Only if I'd have been a little bit more mature, or the location was better, so on and so forth. So there may be certain entities or dynamics that's right in the right fit, but again, the other necessary ingredients, you know what I'm saying, they may not be to that point. You know, it's certain. We the Black Panther Party, cuz we are an international organization, and hold on, this phone is dying on me, 1 second. Can you hear me? I'm still here.
Yes
sir.
International organization. However, there are certain locales where I would say, well, we can't make this move right now in that particular area right now, because, you know what I'm saying, it's not tight enough. Our forces are not tight enough down there. This is pretty much, I would like to, you know what I'm saying. So the whole thing about time and all, and as I said earlier, it's bad but it's good, because we are under intense attack. A lot of times we see our people work best under pressure. Well, we are the intense attack, so we definitely are always open. You know what I'm saying? For, you know, dialogue, so our principal coalition, we always open for that. We encourage that. You know what I'm saying? So we on deck. We on deck.
Yes, sir.
Let me grab a call here. 919 area code 919. What's your name? Where are you calling from? 919. Must have stepped away. Let's go here. We'll take this call before we take a break. 646.
Yes, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, and to the esteemed Chairman Fred. You know, Fred, I would just like to ask you, in Chicago, with all of the police brutality that's going on, what is in place, honestly, coming forward from the religious community with the fratricide that's going on against our people? Is there anybody stepping up in dealing with the blatant racism and, I believe, the murder of our people by the police? I think it's more or less the police that is doing a lot of these killings than who they say it is, gang members and things of that nature. Is there any real fight back at stake, or is there anything going on that's attacking this systemic problem of brutality by these police?
Resistance is happening, and as I said earlier, we being out resourced. You know what I'm saying? But I'm not saying that this time demoralized, but it's happening. But also, it should be noted that there are certain entities that are complicit with this genocide that's happening to our people here. That, you know what I'm saying? It reaches outside Chicago. You go look at the benefactors of the charter schools. I mean, Magic Johnson. You look at the propaganda that piece Spike Lee was in front of, that Chirac, the run get this propaganda, these children just killing each other up here, negating any connection to the ruling class. Everything from the contradiction about the body organs. Chirac, it's been noted. This came out after Superintendent of Chicago Police Eddie Johnson needed a kidney transplant. Chirac is or some of you still want to refer to Chicago, is the number one port, the largest place for the organ transplants. It's been brought to the people in the community say it's not that coincidence. You have a lot of these people, these head shots. People being shot in the head. We had a case about a month and a half ago. A young guy, about 18, 19 years old, was shot and killed. One of his friends was supposed to be listed on his contact list. The hospital, Christ Hospital, south side of Chicago, they called his friend and referred to this guy by his nickname. They say, we hit her. They say he's dead now. We want your permission. Then they call his parents. They say, we want your permission to get his eyes, his pupils. This ain't the movie Get Out I'm talking about. This was what's happening on a day-to-day basis here. Mm-hmm. You know?
Let me ask you this, because I understand all that. What role, honestly, do the Father Flagers, the Jesse Jackson, the Moss, and the rest of those pork chop chicken eating pimp preachers play in our rebellion against this? Are they standing up, doing anything to challenge what's going on, other than talking sugar, honey, iced tea, and waiting to get their pimp money?
Let me put a request to you that on the case of Laquan McDonald, who was shot in excess of 16 times by Chicago James Van Dyke and other Chicago police.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not stop there. Let's look at the Chicago Tribune. I think you can Google it. The Chicago Tribune had revealed the email correspondence, what was sent from the mayor's office, Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Go and pull it up. What quote unquote activist? Who seen the film but the 16 shots when it went down? What staged protest that the mayor have set up to have to occur on the Gold Coast, right across from where the Cabrini Green Housing Project used to be at today, pushed us up out of there? What, even down to the details of even noting what color shirts that they wanted the activists to wear, and how this was done to take away energy from any authentic resistance. See, I'm saying that not to be vague with your question. I'm saying this to say, because a lot of times when I say stuff, when we say stuff, oh, here comes Chairman Freer, he paranoid, he come with this conspiracy theory, he the bad guy. We want to heighten the contradictions so the people themselves can see these injustices and also who's complicit with these crimes. I hope if we still around, and I'm not saying it to sound depressed or nothing, because ain't no guarantee. It's going down. Intense. I hope that we are able to have some sort of like they had Nazi Germany, a Nuremberg hearing. A trial. And not only are the usual suspects, not only the role that the mayor of Chicago, but the machine and the ones, the organizations and the individuals who are complicit with these crimes, but please, go pull it up and see who's seen the film footage. Look at the timing when this movie,
Fred, yeah. I understand. I'm just asking you to just say it and make it plain. Is there anybody?
Ain't no Cliff Notes and Chairman Fred in this class. We want this. The deal is, we have to see if we get these Cliff Notes. If we get these Cliff Notes, we want this reactionary, easy, quick fix solution. We want to heighten the contradiction politically, so we can see this. When they come with it again, we can recognize and identify. No, it's the same type of tactic, same type of organization. Because when I start going through detail, bam, 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 point. We want to look at this subjectively. This is a bad person. This is a machine that grabs. It's a certain prototype. It's certain that we have to become politicized to recognize. Soon as we see, wait a minute, this person on the news all the time. They're not working in our interest. This is what they funding all the time. You know what I'm
so basically, what you're not saying is them Negroes and that white boy, they ain't doing nothing to solve the problem of what's going on in the community other than running their mouths.
But they're not supposed to. Yes, they are, Richard. Don't make that statement
when you know that they supposed to be the imaginary leaders, that they supposed to be the head Negroes in charge. You know that Jesse Jackson is closer to the Sky Daddy than anybody else in the eyes of them Negroes in Chicago. Cut it out, Richard.
But if you accept, just for the dollar, because I think Chairman Fred raised this point. If you accept the position that we're in we have a neo-colonial infrastructure and it is not a new thing. We've had a neo-colonial infrastructure from the time we've been here. If we track that, as Brother Marcus said, if we track that 400 years, and at times we've had in our dialogue, there has been an infrastructure of people who look like, who's supposed to speak in our interests, look like us, speak in our interests, whose primary role is to maintain the control of the populace who is not supposed to. And in the end game is for power, self-determination, and control of our own destiny, defining that destiny. But there's been an infrastructure put in place, sanctioned, whose primary role is not to let that happen. And yep. As we move through history, they put on different clothes. They might have wore bell bottoms. Now they wear skinnies. But it's the same person and the same role. That's what I take out of what the chairman is raising.
Yeah. Hey, Jake, thank you always for your contribution, man.
Have a good one, brother.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, you call. We struggle. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to seem like I'm just giving like these stoic political analysis. It hurts, and it's we struggle against subjectivity. One of the disservices, one of the setbacks we suffer about coming in and just trying, you know, look at this. This is some new contradiction, new way of attacking us. It's important that we put this in a historical context. As brothers just pointed out, just say this. I'm WVON Radio, held itself as a black radio station. Chicago. I'm banned from this radio station. Reverend Flager was the host during Black History Month. So I see the white be on the wall, and a lot of times we want to come and we want this quick fix solution, but as opposed to this white be on the wall, who is who? What's happening? Cats in the streets use this type of that they may not use the term dialectical materialism, but if you see a bunch of Crips, if the Bloods is talking about this is a great Crip and they funding this Crip to come speak for them, so the other Crips say, wait a minute, this guy, why are they funding this dude? Why is this dude speaking and the Bloods love this dude so much? If the cats in the streets can relate to this sort of dynamic, they don't come and say, well, would you tell us about such and such person, how you feel about him personally. They say, wait a minute, we have a way of looking at things. We clear that there's a adversary, there's an antagonistic situation or a war happening. And so the deal is, we arm the people, to politicize the people, to heighten the consciousness, the contradiction, so when it comes, because it's going to get more intense, when they come with your family members, when they come with relationships, different people who the state will raise up, you know, the politics, we'll be able to call the contradiction and see, like, I have very few disappointments. If you go to, like the brothers earlier say, what are you surprised about different forces? If you go to the pet store and you buy a goldfish and you put a leash on it and you bring it home and you keep wondering, I don't understand why this goldfish is not barking. Why is that protecting my home?
That's a good one. Jamie Craig.
And you all about you surprised. People say O.J. Simpson sold out. No, he didn't. You go back and look. It was a piece of O.J. Simpson. Even his childhood friend in elementary school told you how he related to the state. When we say the state, we're just talking about the state's attorney's office. you know what I'm saying? Look at this propaganda bomb that this high-priced slave Z dropped. Look how many people would get duped. This Barack Obama of hip-hop. Look how many people he have corralled to dance their ways back to the gas chamber to self-indict our people, to self-indict ourselves. It's something that we do wrong. To say, well, do you understand why the Jews are making it, we starving, because they got credit. Are you serious? Look how many people who believe in that.
Oh, Fred, the chairman is turning up the heat. Let me grab this call, 731. 731 area code, 731. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hey, brother, this is Brother Danny.
Hey, sir, how are you?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
Great.
Good. All right, man, I'm enjoying the show. I was listening, and, I was listening to you what you were talking about with the guns and how they were being dropped off. You know, I've heard of instances, especially right here in West Tennessee, excuse me, where gun ranges, being broken into, people stealing guns. And police cars being broken into and people stealing, guns out of police cars. But when you see these incidents happening, you find that there are no repercussions behind them. It's just considered a theft. So I wonder how much of these things are somewhat organized to happen or allowed to happen. Mm. I don't think it's that hard to trace a police gun or if it's been used. From my understanding, in a police gun that they have, they fire it off and they get the markings off of it in terms of the bullet. So if it's ever been used again, they would know. So I think a lot of this stuff is, a lot of us want to look at some of these things as just happenstance, but, you really can't look at it as happenstance. A lot of this is put in place to happen. Now I wanted to talk about, how public policy, we've seen public policy for years have such a negative effect on black folk. And how do we shift that to where, even though we don't have the political power that we actually need in terms of representation, but how can we put enough pressure on the people who consider themselves our quote-unquote politicians? How do we put the pressure on them to where they can put something together to fight against some of this public policy? I mean, I look at private prisons and how the private prison industry is a corporation, but it's also considered public policy because it's used to lock people away. But in my state, if you don't have 90% occupancy, the state is fined. So public policy is affecting me all the way around, and it's mostly in a negative way. So how do we put the pressure on these people that are putting these things into place to where we can change these things to where public policy actually, instead of it hurting us the way that it has for so many years, how can we change it to where it becomes somewhat beneficial? I'm looking at how this opioid situation is going on. I'm like, but why is nobody paying attention to this? They're putting a public policy together to help white people who've been strung out on pills and heroin. But those public policies weren't in place for us. So how do we put the necessary pressure on people in order to get things done to where black folk can realize the importance not only of their vote, but the importance of their money as well? Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Brother Danny.
Come in with a clarity. Come in with a clarity of just, again, if the last 20 years of public policy. That's long we talk about the public policy that's been implemented on our people, from that of chattel slavery to sharecropping to whatever different euphemism, whatever new slick sound bite the system may use, whether we former U.S. President Richard Milhouse Nixon campaign for law and order, whether it be some anti-terrorism omnibus act of Bill Clinton, whatever term. Historically, we can just anywhere whether with the indigenous people, manifest destiny, all these different euphemisms, these nice words and terms. Historically, what has been public policy with our people historically? To come in with a clarity, So that, you know what I'm saying, and go at one of the, with that clarity, and also simultaneously go at the, one of the Achilles heels of this system. And one of the Achilles heels of this system is what Malcolm X said, that America's democracy isn't hypocrisy. It's a facade. It's a facade that allows itself to provide the arena for U.S. imperialism to tout itself around the world and have the arrogance to ask does Cuba have political prisoners. It's an arrogance that provides the arena for U.S. imperialism to question who has nuclear weapons or human rights violations. It's a facade. That's when the United Nations, they started doing arbitrary inspections in prisons, the world was up. It's okay, we allow that. It was U.S. that said no. What do they have to hide? Because it's a facade. They benefit off that. They don't say words like child labor. They use different euphemisms. You don't hear terms like political prisoners in U.S. representatives' vernacular. You don't hear propaganda bombs. They call it love and hip hop shows for our people. So just even going with a clarity, and then with that being said, being able to accept it is what Frantz Fanon said. To be able to accept the concessions without compromising your principles, we got to be clear on our principles. What are we fighting for? To be clear on the history of what you're dealing with. This system is public policy comes at the expense of the detriment of our people. The whole discussion about opioids now, with the have you seen the billions of dollars that's coming through for the white community now, as opposed to the locking up, imprisonment of black people?
Yeah, they're getting them help. Yeah.
They give them the help. It's big bucks in this. I mean, give them help, resources. They fund it. Not only are those who are on heroin, the way they're viewed, they're victims. There's a sympathy. There's a human dynamic. There are jobs and employments, counselors, all these type of. You never heard about this when it comes to our people. It's kind of like what comedic genius Richard Pryor said. Richard Pryor said, "White people are comfortable in a black neighborhood." And they'll see us out there in the corner with needles stuck in our arms and dope residue around our noses. And they'll say, that's a shame. And they'll go home, and if their son comes on the front porch with a can of Budweiser beer, and they'll say, oh, my God, it's an epidemic. Could you imagine? Could anyone imagine if these murders in Chirac, if it was white people? Could you imagine? What type of response? If it was white people, every day I went to do a funeral in a funeral home in the morning, I ended up there being there all day. People pulling me to the side, "Chairman, come say something for my cousin. Okay, so my auntie, my grandmother, she was killed. This, my sister, my baby, I ended up being there all day. Wow. All day. It's to the point, listen, I'm struggling with we don't accept this normal because, as Asada Shakur said, one of the things about being oppressed, you have to continuously remind yourself to be able to distinguish what's normal and what's abnormal. We talk about our Triple C programs, Children, Community, and Cubs. Two, three Saturdays ago, we right there, after we get to serving the people, gunshots, they rang literally close by. When I went to go check up on our youth troops, that's our youngsters, the sad thing was, I went to go see them, and it appeared that they were not even impacted. And that's the sad thing about it. Now, I know that it's embedded in there somewhere in their psyche. They impacted. But the sad thing, it appeared they were not. We're going to be paying the price for this for a long time. I don't know how long we're going to be around. We still paying the price from that Hiroshima, that crack that this government dropped on us. And we're going to be paying the price for this for a long time. But the deal is, we got to call the question.
Chairman, how's your time? You all right? Can we go a little bit over, or are you all right? Can we go about another 15, 20 minutes?
Yes, sir.
Good. We're going to take a brief break, and you can give us a call any time we have left at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Get involved in the conversation with activist organizer, the chairman, Fred Hampton, Jr. We'll be right back. Thank you.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. Sundays, 7 p.m., with your host.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here. As many of you know, last March, when it was announced that I was no longer in the Black Muslim movement, it was pointed out that it was my intention to work among the 22 million non-Muslim Afro-Americans and to try and form some type of organization or create a situation where the young people, our young people, the students and others, could study the problems of our people for a period of time and then come up with a new analysis and give us some new ideas and some new suggestions as to how to approach a problem that too many other people had been playing around with for too long. And that we would have some kind of meeting and determine at a later date whether to form a black nationalist party or a black nationalist army. There have been many of our people across the country from all walks of life who have taken it upon themselves to try and pool their ideas and to come up with some kind of solution to the problem that confronts all of our people. And tonight we are here to try and get an understanding of what it is they've come up with.
The economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we should own and operate and control the economy of our community. You would never find, you can't open up a black store in a white community. White man won't even patronize you. And he's not wrong. He got sense enough to look out for himself. And it's you who don't have sense enough to look out for yourself. The white man is too intelligent to let someone else come and gain control of the economy of his community. But you will let anybody come in and control the economy of your community. Control the housing, control the education, control the jobs, control the businesses, under the pretext that you want to integrate. No, you're out of your mind.
Talking about violence, police isn't the answer.
The political, the economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, The community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer. The community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled, misguided, are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a run-down community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar out.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We're joined in conversation this evening with activist, organizer, chairman of POCC, Prisoners of Conscience Committee, and the Black Panther Party Cubs. The chairman is with us this evening, Fred Hampton, Jr. Chairman Fred.
Yes, sir.
Before I ask you this question with the few minutes that you got left with us, let me play this clip. It was a clip coming out of Chicago. It was some type of talk program, and a young man stood up and addressed the situation. I'll play it for the listening audience.
Talking about violence, police isn't the answer. You could put 100,000 police officers on the street that will not reduce violence in the city of Chicago, because police are only there to react. They're only there to react. You have to put money into prevention. And right now, nobody has really said it, but his name is Rahm Emanuel. And this mayor that we have in the city of Chicago does not care about black people. And I'm going to put that on the record. When you can invest $100 million into DePaul basketball arena when they can practice at the United Center for free, and $16.4 million into Uptown to build upscale apartments, when you can build these new bus stops we got now downtown, but walk in our neighborhoods and not a million is coming. When we walking past boarded up schools, boarded up houses, they knock it down with red X's with no plan to redevelop, mental health facilities shut down, the unemployment rate is the highest in Chicago than it is around the country. When you want to talk about violence, you got to talk about the economics, not police.
Just wanted to play that clip. I know you know a lot of people in Chicago, Chairman Fred, but I don't know whether you know that young man that confronted this reporter in reference to the issue of violence in Chicago, dealing with the mayor, Rahm Emanuel. But let me ask this question and get you to expand on it in the time we have left. Me personally, I'm a big proponent of independent black schools, whether it starts in a home, whether it's in the church communities, use some of our places of worship to start re-educating our children. The charter school model, we see what that's doing, and we see what that's about. In Chicago, it's no different than Philadelphia or any other cities where hundreds of public schools in the black community have been shut down for gentrification, to use them for high-scale apartment buildings, things of that nature, for young white folks to come back to the major cities. You had a number of black politicians in Chicago that got behind the mayor of the city of Chicago, in requiring that high school students that graduate, it's a proposal. I don't even know whether it passed or whether it's law, and you can enlighten our listening audience on it. But he made a proposal that high school students can't get a diploma out of high school unless they show four things. Number one, prove they have a secure job. Come in writing and show that they have a secure job when they're leaving high school, or a letter of acceptance to college, or a letter showing that they're in some type of trade apprenticeship, or a letter of acceptance to the military. Now, you got our children that's behind the eight ball automatically with this substandard education that we're getting in our communities. Thousands of schools nationally have been shut down in the communities, and you got a proposal like this to put them further behind an eight ball, where they're demanding all these things, come back with a proof of a secure job. The jobless rate in Illinois and Chicago is the highest in the nation. So how are these children supposed to come back with these things? Talk about this issue, Chairman Fred, in some of the time we have left.
I'm glad
letter, it was noted that the amount of Negro politicians that, you know, that go along with these policies and these edicts that come from the mayor, you know, the mayor and the machine, not just with this, but so many, you know, so many other policies and the tax of the waves on our people. And a lot of times we hear these sound bites, we hear these different, you know, these emotional hit terms, you know, and a lot of times we'll come in with this, they're trying to better our education. And I don't think the state, they'll put a law on our, an attack on our people, and we'll come up with something like, well, they must be trying to, in some way, benefiting us. Historically, how the education, the miseducation, the transportation, everything have been used as war tactics on us. And if you take what's happening in Chirac and other places and just say what's happening anywhere else in the world, people will say, wait a minute, these are human rights violations. You know, just even the I think they broke history records until the time that they should close out 50 public schools at one time in Chicago. Tie into the timing, the red line. The red line is a train that goes through, you know, right through the hood that was shut down. The grants, that was allotted to the green line on the north side to the white community. All these different contradictions. If we were to say we have any other place, they'd be recognized as war tactics. Adding to that, the whole even going to these schools. These prisons, because I think the term, what's name, is kind of outdated. The term, you say, from the school to prison pipeline, is literally a prison now. You are coming to these places. Even clinical psychologists talk about the detrimental impact when you can't learn in an environment where you got to be searched and scanned. The police is there with you. You know what I'm saying? Like law enforcement. Working in these hospitals and in these schools, and these are the same exact police that are planting drug packs on these children, and you get mysteriously shot, and you get to the hospital, it's the same police there. Then you go to school, it's the same police there. So it's this whole dynamic. It's clearly a statement that they'll say they do not have our interests at hand. In fact, it's detrimental, and matter of fact, it's designed to wipe us out. Another poem, just lost my train of thought. There's another poem on the raise, too, about the school.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Don't worry about it. We'll get back to it. Brother Richard, because I don't want to hold, we did kept Chairman a little overtime.
Yeah.
But I don't want to hold it too much longer.
I just will reiterate that. Since he'll be coming to Philadelphia next week, we can engage him. We'll be out there, so engage him there. Once again, I think it's really important to recognize that we need to have a clear understanding, a clear analysis of what we're dealing with, instead of just dealing with the sound bites that we're sound bites and personalities.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm not to cut you off.
Yes.
Even with that policy, I think people should put in context what type of conditions we're living in, or better yet, as Marvin Gaye said, this ain't living, that we're existing in. The criteria is like, say, that you have the four parts of criteria that you need in order for you to graduate. Mind you, that even telling you have to have a commitment from some employer that you will receive a job. The only quote unquote jobs in our hood, in our community, is the foreign merchants telling these little young sisters that they can come behind the 4-inch thick glass and work for them under the condition that they do something strange for some change, and or these cats get involved in pushing the narcotics on the street. They can't even get that no more. The cartel done took that. They can't. The young black youth can't even get that job no more. The cartel done shut all that down. So then the other option, they say you have to join the military. I commit to give you some free cars, but you have to buy your gas from me. You know what I'm saying? And Chicago has the highest amount of military academies now in the country. They ain't got to say the draft no more. All they got to do is change the words around and say, okay, now this has happened. This is the condition that comes with it. It's a setup.
Chairman Fred, I want to thank you for being with us, spending some time with us, and we are scheduled to do a live broadcast on Saturday at the African Independence Day celebration over there at 52nd and Pine Street. So we'll be out there. Yes. You'll see the table, Time for Awakening. Come on over, spend some time with us. What time will you be there, Chairman Fred?
You're not sure? Get it wrong time.
Okay.
I don't have that by me right now.
Well, don't worry about it. I'll get in contact with Brother Obi and several of the organizers. We'll kind of coordinate our broadcast time for the time you'll be there.
Right on. We're looking forward to it.
I want to thank you for you being with us. Thank you for your work, man, and continue to struggle.
Thank you. Thank the listeners, and we thank the people in general. And look forward to seeing our people this Saturday.
Peace to you, brother.
Peace, man.
Right on. Peace to you. To our people, friend.
You know, it was an interesting conversation that we had with Chairman Fred.
Yes.
A lot of information, things that we can expand upon. We'll see him here, if all things go right, next Saturday. At the live broadcast of Time for Awakening out there at the African Independence Day celebration, the 13th annual at 52nd and Pine Street here in Philadelphia. You know, Richard, before we leave, and we done went over time, so it's no problem. I got a segment. I put it on the Time for Awakening page, the whole piece. I'm going to just play a little segment for our listening audience to listen to. It was a guest that Tony Brown on Tony Brown's Journal had on his program. It's 20 years ago almost. Dr. Khalid Al-Mansour. I want you to hear some of the things that he states and that he alleges and kind of match it up with what we're dealing with now. It's kind of interesting. It's an interesting dialogue that he had on the program.
Mansour,
I want to share it.
Dr. Al-Mansour.
I want to share it with our listening audience. And maybe in a few minutes we have left, we could touch on some of the things, Richard. If not, we can hold it off till next week. But I just want to share it with our listening audience as soon as I can cue this thing up here. Let's go to it.
Mansour. Dr. Al-Mansour is the author of Betrayal by Any Other Name. Thank you, sir, for coming.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And welcome. I have read your book. I have been enthralled by it. To say that you make some very heavy statements is an understatement. The premise of your book, that the black community, which is brought totally into its leadership, historically and in present day, cannot trust that leadership. Is that a fair statement for you to make? Is it based on something historical?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for being here. I'd like to say assalamu alaikum to everyone.
Walaikum salam.
And I think from my studies and travels, the black leadership has been the most corrupt, backward, unenlightened, and selfish that I've ever seen. This leadership is, we call black, but it is a combination of black and white. It has been selected, groomed, and imposed on the black masses. It enjoys access to the media so that their point of view might be reinforced over and over and over. These are exciting times because they are times in which an explosion will either occur or will not occur. Something is occurring in the general white community that the black masses are generally not aware of. At the same time, something is occurring within the black community that the white masses are not aware of. There are leaders on both sides, some of whom are frightened, some who feel they can manipulate the process, some who believe that they can benefit from the process and divide the spoils. What do I really mean? White people today generally believe that there have been too many opportunities given to blacks. SBA loans into the trillions, set-asides into the trillions. Black people committing crimes and assuming no responsibility whatsoever. And when they kill white people especially, the black community does not speak out and condemn it. When truck drivers are almost beaten to death There seems to be no inclination on the part of blacks to say this was a mistake and we're sorry. That's the general mood. I'm not saying that's all accurate. That's the general mood of white people. On the other hand, the black people are saying we haven't got anything. We're at the bottom. We've been the bottom since we've been here. We've been slaves, and now we see very little except politicians running it around making speeches. In fact, what most white people don't know, that amount of money that was generally earmarked for the black masses never arrived, or it arrived in very small measures. It was siphoned off by a group of middle-class blacks and middle-class whites, and the whites got more than the blacks because the blacks were obsessed with white fever. They wanted acceptance. And so whites, when they found out that a black was flattered when he heard the statement, "You're not like the others. If the blacks were just like you, we wouldn't have a race problem," he began to smile and straighten out his bow tie and dream lofty dreams. How one day he would be a part of the corporate 500, maybe the first black in the White House, maybe the first president of a corporate 500 in America. That kind of syndrome caused the black to leave his people psychologically. He may ride through the hood from time to time. Psychologically, he's not there. His entire life has been spent trying to find a way to get away from the black masses. When Jews live among Jews, they say, well, that's natural. It's religious. When Japanese live among Japanese, they say, well, that's cultural. When white people live among white people, they say, well, that's certainly natural. But when black people live among black people, it is said that's segregation. Break it up. Because blacks couldn't possibly want to live among themselves. They couldn't possibly want to go to school with themselves. They couldn't possibly want to work for another black business. This syndrome that has been perpetuated by a group of whites who have made money in the black community and did not want any blacks in business. In fact, wrote into the charter of the NAACP when it was founded that the NAACP couldn't even own land. They wanted to assure there would be no competition. They couldn't do it in the white world. In the white world, that would be called a monopoly or antitrust, and they might have to go to jail. Certainly pay a fine. In the black community, they could masquerade with these hand-picked Negro leaders or so-called leaders who had as their agenda to disappear. What they could never utter is that they physically wished for the day that they would be able to disappear. Now we're at a juncture in history that unless the white masses really understand and the black masses really understand, there's going to be the largest bloodbath in America. What is going on now in the Soviet Union will be just a very minor episode of what is going to take place in this country. White people are frightened. They read about priests committing acts of child abuse. They don't understand it. They read about the man in Somalia bringing down an American helicopter and then the United States offering him a C-12 to fly to Addis Ababa. They don't understand the Panama Canal. Why did America have to leave? They don't understand why the world, 80% of whom is not white, is going to stand in the United Nations and question the so-called American policy. And that sense of fear in the white community, they are saying we are about at the level that enough is enough. We are almost at the point to consider the extermination of 25 million blacks. We might preserve the middle class because, after all, they're useless anyway. But the black masses that are costing so much money for prisons, so much money for crime, so much money for children having babies, so much money for welfare, public housing. And America right now is virtually broke. If your viewers would read a book, Bankruptcy 1995, written by a very distinguished businessman who was a part of the Grace Commission under Ronald Reagan.
To Figge.
Yes.
I did a program here on that.
Excellent.
My viewers know about it.
and very realistic.
Yes.
Well, white people are gradually incorporating these fears. Blacks don't know very much about it because their leaders are keeping them in ignorance. Now, as that escalates, misunderstanding, confusion, the whites feel that we're not going to give any more money. The effect in the black community is to escalate social problems. Tensions are bound to continue. I am convinced that the white real power structure is testing. They want to know how far can you go. The international community is the missing link. What will be the reaction if America is projected like a Russia, as semi-barbaric, turning against 25 million black?
I'm just going to play a little teaser there for the listening audience, and then you can catch the rest of it on timeforawakening.com. Richard,
yes.
You know, I'm listening to Dr. Khalid Al-Mansour talk with Tony Brown, and this was over 20 years ago that he had that segment on his program. And it seems strangely familiar to stuff we're dealing with today.
Today, yes, definitely. I mean, that shows the systemic, you know, the systemic nature of it. And that it's only been held off, but it's getting to the point, as he mentioned, on both sides, white fear, they can't even hold it off. That's why they're taking the drugs, right?
Mm-hmm.
White fear that they don't have the jobs that they, you know, so they can't even offer them jobs in any area. Right. And so it's to the point where they, you know, they selected Trump. So it's
exactly
where before they might have been able to hold it off. Now it's got to the point it's growing to where they don't know themselves how that ruling elite. And this is a new ruling elite, new in the sense that it's younger. I mean, and that even in that 20 years, you got a guy, the Facebook guy didn't exist, right? Google didn't exist. They're now a part of that elite. But at the same time, you have the oil barons. And then you have the financial interest group that are around. So but what do you do with those whites and blacks who there's no fooling that they're a part of will have any opportunity. So, you know, he was right on in his analysis. It's just a matter of, it's been containment. And the question is how long it's going to be contained.
You know, to kind of go along with some of the things that he asserted then over 20, I think it was 22 years ago, according to AP report and, it was on Friday when Donald Trump appeared before some type of law enforcement convention or something of that nature in Long Island, New York. You heard of the things that he had mentioned to police officers there.
I'm somewhat vague reference.
I'll just read this segment for the listening audience. On Friday, President Donald Trump appeared before a white American law enforcement officials and delivered a hate speech during which he encouraged police to be brutal, including hitting suspects, hitting their heads against patrol cars when they're placing them in the back seat. And this is a quote from his speech. When you see these towns and when you see these thugs being thrown into the back of a paddy wagon, you just see them thrown in. Rough. And I said, don't be too nice. Be a little rough, Trump said, according to the Huffington Post reports. Like when you guys put somebody in a car and you're protecting their head, you know, on the way down, you have your hand over their head. Don't do that. Hit their head against the car. Just like, when they killed somebody, they didn't, take time not to hit their head. So I'm saying you take away your hand and bang their and hit their head, he said. Of course, the rousing group of officers applauded this hate speech. Trump, mm-hmm. again, for years, laws have been made to protect the criminals, said the President Trump. Totally protect the criminal, not the officer. You do something wrong, you're in the jeopardy, not them. These laws are stacked against you. I'm going to change those laws. So you see what you're dealing with. And, you know, everybody knew that. Hillary Clinton was no different because you see the crime bill. She was just a little more sophisticated than this guy. So it was, you know, some of our people were drinking the Kool-Aid talking about the Clintons and opposed to this. It was no different. Just mm-hmm. this guy's a little more crass and a little more ignorant. But it's the same soup, a good cop, bad cop, both of them cops. The same type of thing. So, you know, I just want to read that share that with the listening audience. According and along with that clip, but you can hear the whole clip in its entirety by going to timeforawakening.com and just scroll up there. It ought to be on the headlining page or down below. But it was interesting what he said. It kind of touches on with our caller out of Chicago, Brother X, and I'm surprised he didn't call at night. Our caller out of Chicago certs all the time. So I guess if he goes to the podcast, he'll be kind of happy that he has an ally that believes exactly what he stated. But it was interesting, the whole thing. You get a chance go in there and hear the whole clip. Brother Richard. Yeah, so going over there and look at the logistics of what's going on. Hopefully, Lord willing, there's no rain on Saturday, because that will really throw a monkey wrench in a lot of electronic equipment out there. But if everything goes well and according to plan, we'll be out there broadcasting live for our listening audience. It'll probably be maybe 12 to 2, 12 to 3, something like that. We'll be out there for a couple of hours. So, and we'll talk about it Friday on the broadcast. So some of the listening audience, if they're around during that period, they can tune in. And plus, with the tune-in app, you can carry it with us. Carry it, you know, on the train, in your car, wherever. You'll be able to hear either the streaming podcast or the live broadcast with the tune-in app. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon.